This is Brendan Donegan with the Ag Report for WGXE 90.7 FM. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Columbia and Greene counties produce over $100 million of agricultural goods a year. The Ag Report looks behind the stats to highlight the people and issues involved in Twin Counties food production. Brendan Donegan interviews local artisanal and mid-scale providers of crops, wool, dairy, fish, and timber, and those at our cooperative extension, chambers of commerce, and tourist board offices who help market our agricultural products. Today I'm in the village of Catskill overlooking Catskill Creek with Tim Graham and Anna Rosenkrantz of Left Bank Ciders. What's the story of LBC?
Well, we started making cider after working at the farmer's market in Greenpoint, New York, and
2015 or so.
That's in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
So I think the backstory is that we were collecting like scrap junk apples that were destined for the compost because Anna was working for
Grow NYC, like the local compost program.
Mm-hmm.
And we just collected so many apples that were mostly good, but just not perfect enough to be sold at the market to customers who want perfectly round, ripe, red apples.
Mm-hmm.
So we just felt sad for all these apples, and we started taking them home, and we were cooking with them and making things with them.
Yeah,
and
they were highly usable.
They were highly usable.
So
and
we didn't want them to go to the...
Yeah.
They weren't going to the trash,
no.
Trash necessarily, but they were going to the compost.
The compost, so. But we thought they were too good for the compost.
Yeah.
And then we made just a lot of apple cakes and things like that, and we were like, what else can we do with these? So.
Yeah.
We started making cider in a very, very low, professional way.
Yeah.
We were using a food processor and a t-shirt.
Where does the process of making cider start? I mean, it starts with the apples. You
mm-hmm.
got a bushel basket of apples. Where do they go? What do you do with them?
Well, for us, it starts before we even have our hands on a bushel of apples, because what we love to do, what we're really passionate about doing, I mean, we collect apples in a variety of ways, but our passion is collecting wild apples and apples that are growing, tended by the land, essentially. And we spend a lot of our time in late summer, early fall, through late fall, till the first snowfall,
yeah.
Collecting wild apples in the Catskills. That's what we love to do, and a lot of our ciders are wild apple, wild foraged, wild fermented.
How do they differ from cider apples that are sold commercially?
Well, like Anna mentioned, there are many different types of apples, and most of the apples that you'll get at a you pick orchard or from the market or anything like that are just for eating apples.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually called like culinary or dessert fruit.
Yeah.
And then there are some cider specific apples that we kind of describe as are like wine grapes. Like you wouldn't really want to eat wine grapes necessarily. They're not for that.
Yeah.
They're super bitter, or they're really sour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
or they
taste
have a
great
texture that is really unpalatable.
Yeah.
How do they look?
They look gnarly. They can they have scabs. They
gnarly apples.
They are bumpy.
Yeah, they might.
I mean, they can.
Good.
They're beautiful. Yeah. They can be extraordinarily beautiful, multicolored, striped. They come in. They really run the gamut, and they can also be very traditional apple.
Mm-hmm. Looking.
They're usually smaller than an apple that you would buy at a farm stand.
So you go out with a sack and you come back here with your apples.
We use IKEA bags.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're very sturdy. They're very large.
When you get the apples back here, what do you do? What are the steps you use to do this?
So a lot of times we'll do what's called sweating. So we'll just leave the apples to sit for a period of time,
mm-hmm.
and they will evaporate some of their moisture and water content. Which
how long would that be?
Well, a lot of our schedule just depends on how many days we're out in the field versus pressing. So it's more aligned with our schedule than it is like any specific length of
mm-hmm.
time. But all the apples are going to usually like sit for a little bit, which is sweating, until we get a volume of apples that we can press, because we don't want to do a small volume. We want to
mm-hmm.
do like a larger
How many
volume.
Bushels would that be?
Let's see, 20 bushels goes into a bin, and we want to do at least 4 bins at a time. So that's 80, but preferably 100 to 200 at a time would make sense. So yeah, we collect the apples. They're sweating while we get the right volume. And then the difference between making wine with grapes and making cider is we have to grind the apples into a pulp as opposed to like just putting grapes in a press or foot stomping them or something. So there's an intermediary step where we grind the apples because you can't just press whole apples. So there's the grinding process, and then you have the pomace is what it's called, and then you press that and that gives you the juice.
So how many varieties or how many styles of cider do you serve or do you offer? Oh my.
Yeah. I'm pointing to our bottle shop.
Yes. I'm looking at a wall of bottles.
Yeah, we make a lot. We have a lot of fun because we're doing a lot of small batches. We don't make very many large batches of anything. Because say we're up in the mountains and we find one really great tree or several great trees, or we're in one area of the mountains, we want to capture the essence of Wyndham or Tannersville. So we will make and produce a cider and then bottle that so small batches to reflect
Do you call them Wyndham? Do you call them Tannersville?
On the labels, we'll explain where the apples are from.
Yeah, we will name them after people who gave us access to their apples, too. We have an orchard at a friend of ours named Byron, and he has a really nice little hobby orchard.
So he gets his own cider.
So there's a Byron, there's a Tina, there's another landowner with like some very special cider apple trees. There's a Steve, who's another hobby orchard. Steve.
There's a Jackie.
So
you have a Steve, you have a bottle of Steve.
It's called Madman Steve.
Madman Steve.
Okay. We asked his permission before we called it that, but he is a madman.
Well, how has the response been to these varieties that you serve? Do people come in and say, you got some Steve?
Sometimes people are looking for specific things.
I mean, I think we try to strike a balance between having enough variety that there's something for mostly everyone, not everyone. But
yeah, everything is dry, so we don't really make any sweet cider. So
How do the alcohol levels differ from batch to batch?
They're actually pretty consistent from batch to batch, which is really nice. The wild cider will get quite high in alcohol content.
How high would that be? ABV, as they say.
We're a farm cider, and we're really not legally allowed to make cider above 8.5%.
Okay.
So we keep everything below that because that's the law for us. But cider, usually it's all within the 7 to 8% alcohol range. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, we tell people, it's like a very strong beer, but less alcoholic than wine. So it's a nice sweet spot between the kind of beer and wine space.
What outlets have you found to market your product?
We mostly do direct to consumer.
We're lucky. We have this big tap room. When we first opened, it was July of 2020, so it was pretty pandemic.
I remember going by and thinking they're brave.
We really had no
brave
choice.
Stupid.
Had been preparing the space for almost 2 years, you know, like we were ready. And one thing we did was we were not planning on having a patio. So we pivoted and laid cement down and put up a patio because we knew that that was going to be like the space to be, the safe space to be. We have this space, and our goal was always to have this be like the place where people would come rather than us having to wholesale. And
yeah, the main point of sale would be here.
So that what are your hours? Plan.
Right now we are Wednesday through Sunday, and on the weekdays we're 4 to 10, and on the weekend we're 1 to 10.
Yeah.
And we have food and a lot of pop-ups.
Yeah, we have pizza every Saturday. We have food Fridays and Thursdays.
How has your experience with the farmers market in Hudson been?
Oh, great.
Great, we love it.
It's great. It's for us, we got our start at a farmers market, so it's kind of like...
Very comfortable,
familiar. Farmers markets are just like... I don't know, they feel like super sweet communities. And mm-hmm. we bring our kid who runs around, and there are lots of other kids there, and you see the same people every week, and it's a lovely place.
Do you do any other farmers markets or just Hudson?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, we do. We pop up at Saugerties, Kinderhook. We've done a couple others.
Yeah, we do others as well.
But Hudson right now is our like consistent every week.
That's on Saturdays.
Yes.
Yeah, Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Tell us about Apple Camp.
Well, I just got back from New York Apple Camp, which
it's a ragtag team of Apple nerds and enthusiasts.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a spinoff where they started it in Maine, and the Maine Organic Farmers Association put it together for its first few iterations, and now they're doing one in New York.
So what do you do there?
Oh, you just go, and there's some really great presentations about apples and a lot of apple cider makers and nursery people and orchardists and stuff all gather and just see what's going on in apple world.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
There's also like
Cider Days in Franklin County. That's mm-hmm. a big thing.
There's a loose affiliation now of like Hudson Valley Cider Makers, which is just getting off the ground, which is nice because cider making... it's not new to the Hudson Valley, but it's like new as sort of like there's not been like an organized group of cider makers in the way that they're sort of coalescing now.
So you're not apple hermits.
No.
I mean, you do get around and you meet other apple enthusiasts.
Oh, yeah.
Cider enthusiasts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. What advice would you give to people thinking about an ag-based business in this region?
I think I would give... advice, try to do direct to consumer as much as possible. It's mm-hmm. very hard to find markets. It can be really difficult to get into farmers markets. There's waiting lists. And
so when you say direct to consumer, you're saying not farmers markets, but you're
I mean, that is a form of direct to consumer. But
what other ways are there?
Wholesale, like wholesale for us is sort of like a side hustle.
Yeah.
That is, it's a tough business, like getting into retail stores and restaurants and things like that.
How about advertising?
I mean, we don't do much advertising outside of Instagram, and we have a newsletter.
Yeah.
All right.
We're not opposed. We just haven't really explored that.
Yeah. I guess if you can find a way to sell your things to people directly, however that fits.
To cut out the middleman.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
What do you think, Anna? You think there's other ways?
I mean, the other ways people do are, I mean, wholesaling and things like that. But I mean, for us, we're really rooted in this community. We're both a bar and also a destination for people who are like tourists who are looking for things to do. Mm-hmm. And that model has worked out for us, as opposed to trying to get into as many markets as possible. Mm-hmm. Markets being bars, restaurants, wine shops, things like that, because there's a lot of legwork involved in that.
Yeah.
And you make less money.
Yeah, what Anna said was a really good point. Like, root yourself in a community.
Yes.
And really be a part of that mm-hmm. community, and they will support you.
Absolutely, yeah.
So know your surroundings.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was really important for us not just to have this business here, but to live in this community. We live on Main Street. Our partner lives on Main Street. Like, we're here. We're part of this community. We host
soup
events.
Soup night.
Soup nights.
Soup night.
We do lots of community events, and I think our community recognizes that. And
we were able to give a lot of money back to the community this year because all of the soup night donations just go directly to organizations that people pick, and we gave over $4,000 back through that process, which is really great.
So, finally, what foods go well with cider?
Well, the classic one is cheese, and that really does work very well.
I think cider, a dry cider, goes really well with spicy food.
Okay.
Indian food?
Indian food, yeah, totally. Yeah. I wish we had more Indian food at our disposal up here, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have a cider. I guess we could kind of think about our list and say we have a cider for almost every food. We have peach cider and currant cider, and then we have the wild ciders, and then just classic dry ciders.
Yeah, something with more body, like our currant cider would go really well with, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of drinks like a red wine almost.
Yeah,
it could go really well with
meats,
pork.
And
what foods do you do you sell here to go with the ciders? Do you have cheese?
That's a great question. No, it's on our agenda, but it's been on our agenda for 3 years. Let's see, on Thursday nights, we host a farmer's market.
We have pizza.
And we have pizza. Okay. By a pizza maker who goes by X Circles X. Mm-hmm. Very well known in the area. Great pizza.
Yeah.
On Friday nights, we have Mermaid Cafe, a beloved former restaurant in town who closed and now does a pop-up and does like her foraged food bowls on Friday nights, and they're amazing. Saturdays, we have X Circles X Pizza again all afternoon into the evening. And Sunday, we have pop-ups, which is most often a Berkshire...
Grilled lamb.
Grilled. They do grilled meats and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. And where are you located exactly?
We're located on 150 Water Street in Catskill.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Brendan Donegan with the Ag Report for WGXC 90.7 FM.